Happy wife. Check out this awesome review from Heart and Soil, you guys. My wife has been struggling with allergies for a long time. We tried everything. We went to the ENT doctor. He told her she just has to deal with it. When I heard about your supplements, I hopped online, saw the histamine and immune supplement and how it could possibly benefit my wife. So I bought her one. Within a couple of days, her eyes stopped watering. Her nose stopped clogging. Thank you for your wisdom and guidance. That is from Eric P. and his happy wife. I couldn't be more stoked for them. And check this one out as well. Wow, this stuff works. I consider myself to be generally in good shape. After hearing about whole package, I thought it might be worth trying out, especially since I don't incorporate organ meats into my diet. Wow is really the best word to describe the changes I've experienced. Most notable have been a marked increase in sex drive, energy, general zeal for life. Thank you for making this available to us. Keep up the great work. That one is from Edwin A. You guys, I'm just proud to be a part of Heart and Soil and the work that we are doing there. We make grass-fed, grass-finished, regeneratively raised supplements, and we desiccate them, we freeze-dry them, we put them into gelatin capsules, and we give them to you so that you can reclaim your birthright to radical health and experience benefits like increased libido, more zeal for life, or improvement in allergies with something like whole package or histamine and immune. You can always email us radicalhealth@heartandsoil.co. If you have questions, there's a whole team there to help you out. So check us out, heartandsoil.co, and reclaim your birthright to radical health. My guest on this week's podcast is me. As I start out 2022, I'm going to be doing a lot of solo casts. I wanted to really answer some of your Ask Me Anything questions, really dig into a lot of the foundational principles of my dietary philosophy. Many of you have been listening for a long time. I think a lot of this will be review for you, but hopefully it will still be interesting. There are a lot of new listeners and I get asked a lot of the same questions. So I wanted to make sure everybody is up to speed and I can get as many of these questions answered as possible for you guys. So this is an Ask Me Anything podcast. The next couple will probably be Ask Me Anything podcast as well. We'll be getting to many of your burning questions. Join us for Animal Based 30 at Heart and Soil, animalbased30.co.com to join. It's free. It's happening now. The Animal Based Gathering is happening in Santa Teresa, March 11th to the 14th. You can go to Animal Based Gatherings to join. You can come hang out with us all here. We're going to surf. We're going to jump off waterfalls. It's going to be great. And if you like this podcast, please leave me a review at Apple Podcasts. That is how we spread the message. I want to say thank you to all my sponsors for this podcast. That is how this happens. That's how we make it doable. I built a whole bunch of new stuff in the studio, trying to get better audio. That's all made possible by the sponsors so we can improve your listening and viewing experience. First, I've got to give a shout out to my friends at Force of Nature. I don't know if you guys are familiar with them, but they are freaking amazing, you guys. I love Force of Nature. Many of you may be familiar with the work of Force of Nature. They are a legit regenerative agriculture meat company based in Austin, Texas. I had the CEO, my friend Robbie Sansom, on my podcast. They are 100% grass-fed, and they have pasture-raised and wild-caught meats and traditional proteins like beef and chicken, wild game like venison, elk, and boar. And they have ancestral blends that contain 7% organs. We are partnering with them this month for our 30-day animal-based challenge. And so at the end of the animal-based challenge, which you can join at Animal Based 30, there will be giveaways from Heart and Soil and Force of Nature. So if you want to get fresh organs, which I think is always the best way to do it, get them from things like meats or their ancestral blends at Force of Nature. And they are just good freaking people. I've been out to the farm at Rome Ranch and Katie and Taylor and Robbie, they believe in this. You may have seen my stories. You may have seen me drinking turkey blood at the farm. They have the bison. They have some bison there. It's just so incredible the work that they're doing with this company. And we need to understand that you cannot abstain from voting with your dollars. You either are voting for companies that are multinational like Agrigenta or, you know, like Monsanto or Unilever, or you're voting for regenerative grass finished agriculture. And that is what Force of Nature is doing. Vote with your dollars and feed your family well. Force of Nature is amazing. Listeners of this podcast get a perk. You can go to forceofnature.com. They will ship directly to your door in a few days. You will get $15 off your first purchase if you enter the code CarnivoreMD22. That's capital C, Carnivore, capital MD, 22 for $15 off your order at forceofnature.com. Thank you to them for joining us in creating the best Animal Based 30 ever. And thank you to them and for doing all of the good work in the world. This is a company doing amazing freaking stuff. I love them deeply. Forceofnature.com. Also want to give a shout out to my friends at BlueBlocks, BlueBlox.com. I've had Andy Mant on the podcast. We talked about why sunglasses are BS. And I think many of you are getting savvy to the problems with AirPods and the Bluetooth signal and the radiation. So BlueBlox has recently done low EMF or no EMF headphones. They've done an EMF shield for your laptop, which I think is freaking amazing. I'm hanging out in Costa Rica with one of my buddies, and I saw him with his laptop on his freaking junk the other day, and I'm thinking, that's a lot of radiation going to your junk. Check me on that. That's not tinfoil hat, but you can use a screen. BlueBlox makes this to protect your junk from your laptop. And they make great blue blocking glasses for your circadian rhythm maintenance. They make an amazing set of red light bulbs. They have all kinds of stuff. Check them out. BlueBlox, BlueBlox.com. You can get 15% off your order with the code CARNIVOREMD. Got to give a shout out to my buddy Monsel. SacredHunting.com is his company. This is the way to start hunting, guys. There are two hunts that he specifically set up for followers of this podcast, for animal-based, for carnivore followers, February 21 to 23, 2022, and May 20th to 22nd, 2022. There's five spots on each hunt. Go to sacredhunting.com/Paul. 2-minute application, set up an exploratory call with Monsel. This is the way to start your hunting experience. You'll learn how to track, stalk, kill, field dress wild game animals. And Monsel adds ritual and Native American components, making it a rite of passage. I had a great hunt with Monsel, my buddy Kyle Kingsbury, a few years ago. We killed a deer. Many of us killed the deers. I killed a deer with a bow. Kyle wasn't so lucky, but he's probably a much better shot than I am. And we all got to cook and eat that meat over the fire. It was a real bonding experience for all of it. I love what Monsel's doing. SacredHunting.com/Paul. Check it out. And you will not be disappointed if this is the first experience you will have with hunting. I love what he's doing there. And last but never least, I want to give a shout out to my friends at WhiteOakPastures.com. I believe so deeply in regenerative agriculture and in grass feeding and grass finishing. And this is an amazing farm in Bluffton, Georgia. You can find them at WhiteOakPastures.com. You can get 10% off your first order there. And they have meat, they have organs, they have fat, they have turkey, guinea, chicken. They do grass-fed meat, and they have pasture-raised pigs, which are going to be pretty much the best pigs I've found. And they have corn and soy-free chickens, which they did at my request. Thanks, Jenny. They're awesome. Check them out, whiteoakpastures.com. If you're in Georgia, go visit them. All right, guys, that is it. On to this week's podcast. Hope you enjoy it. And again, join us for animalbased30.com. What is up, truth seekers? Welcome to 2022. I have a lot of ideas for new and exciting ways to share ideas and content with you all in 2022. Those of you watching on YouTube will see that I have made some improvements to my Costa Rica studio, and hopefully that improves the watching experience. I've also tried to improve the audio experience, and so hopefully the audio is coming through better. But wanted to start the year off with an Ask Me Anything podcast. I'm going to do many more of these in 2022. I'm going to do many more solo podcasts in 2022 in which I can directly answer your questions and address the concerns that you all have regarding animal-based diets, carnivore-ish type diets, and nutrition in general as best I can. So I wanted to start with a framework for the way that I think about animal-based diets, carnivore-ish diets, before we dive into a few questions for today's episode and we kick off 2022. And the framework is this. If you are thriving, why change anything? Why change anything if you are thriving? Really? But if you are not thriving in any way, shape, or form, body composition, mood, libido, sleep, emotional stability, depression, anxiety, autoimmune disease, skin issues, then it's time to question your diet if you would like to live a higher quality life with any of those issues. And I think that so many people forsake, this is my adage, forsake their birthright to a very, very radical life. I love that word. I was born in the 80s. I love the word radical. I really believe that most of us, the vast majority of us, perhaps all of us, have a birthright to live very, very well, to live with the body that we want, with the libido that we want, with the mental clarity that we want, with the athletic performance we want, with a great degree of resilience from athletic injury, with the mood that we want, with the sleep that we want. And we're forsaking a lot of that. So that is why I do the work I do, because I think that sharing these pieces of information may help people think a little bit outside of the box. We have been told for generations things that everyone, quote unquote, knows are true. Vegetables are good for you. Meat is bad for you, especially if you eat too much. Well, I am here to challenge those notions. I've been doing it for years. And I think that that is why I do the work that I enjoy. That's why I do this type of work. So let's begin with a few of those notions. If you are thriving, don't change anything. Whatever you're doing, don't change anything. But if you're not, it's time to question those premises. It's time to question the way that you are living. I'm a big fan of the remembering. I'm a big fan of broader thinking beyond diet, but mostly I focus on diet. Most of you know that I'm also a huge fan of grounding, getting in nature, playing, community, real sunlight, and being in communities in the natural world where there's not so many people and not so much concrete and way more nature and way more risk and way more adventure and way more shared experience with humans. But how do humans eat to optimize our health? That is the question that I continue to ask, continue to refine, continue to search. I'm an explorer, I'm an adventurer, and my opinions will always be evolving. Generally, they've stayed pretty consistent. A few things have changed over the years. I summarized some of that in last week's podcast where I went through the highlights of 2021. But if you are not thriving, it is time to question your paradigm. And that is why we are doing this. And those are the people that I think should be thinking about animal-based, aka carnivore-ish diets the most. If you're thriving, eat all the vegetables you want. But if you're not, maybe it's time to think, are vegetables, that is leaves and stems and roots and seeds, which are seeds, nuts, grains, and legumes, beans, really that good for humans? Or is it possible that we're wrong about this and that they're a net negative? This is what I'm arguing for. This is why I do this work. Is meat really bad for humans if we eat too much? Or is it possible that most of us are not getting enough meat and most of us are not getting any organs or any real connective tissue, which is why we do what we do at Heart and Soil, to get you desiccated organs, and why we are doing this animal-based 30 right now, this free 30-day animal-based challenge. You can join us, animalbased30.com, to get into that. It's amazing. Join us for that if you want to jumpstart your 2022. I'm sure I will say 2021 for 2022 at least once in this podcast, but this is the framework. If you're thriving, don't change anything. If you're not thriving, ask questions, learn, think outside the box, and start to question some of these things that we've been told as, quote, everyone knows as true for many, many years, because that will limit your ability to grow and to be optimally healthy. The second thing I would like to say before we start this podcast, before we get in deeper into this podcast, is this. There are a lot of conflicting things out there in the nutritional space. Maybe I can make a convincing argument. Maybe tomorrow someone will rebut my stuff with a convincing argument. And unless that person and I debate directly, what are you to believe? There are so many convincing, intelligent, and I believe well-intentioned people in the nutritional space that what are you supposed to do? How are you supposed to sort through this? The answer, in my opinion, is not throwing your hands up and eating junk food. The answer is trying all of the recommendations for any particular party, thinking for yourself, researching for yourself as much as you're able, and deciding what makes you feel best. That may sound like a truism or a platitude, but I do think it's true in this case. Do what makes you feel best. But if you're going to do that, do a real experiment. Don't just do an animal-based diet, but have some seed oils or maybe a little bit of this or a little bit of that, a little bit of bread. Then you won't really know. You have to do good experiments, but do good experiments. You want to try a vegan diet? Do a good vegan diet and you tell me how it makes you feel. You want to do a carnivore-ish diet? You want to do an animal-based diet? Join us for Animal-Based 30 and do it for real. And then you will know how it makes you feel and then you will have good data. That is the most valuable experiment you can do. My job is to make you at least a little bit curious about these things so that you may dip your toe into animal-based or carnivore-ish, or you may cut out a few vegetables, and that may be the beginning of an incredibly increased quality of life for you. And that is my goal. There's just so much out there. I know you guys get overwhelmed. I see this on all the social media platforms. I debate this person or that person's ideas, and I say, oh, celery juice is bullshit. That was a recent post that I did on Instagram, and celery juice is bullshit because it's made from celery, which is a plant stem. It has plant leaves, and the person telling you that celery juice is good for you is someone that's claiming to channel Jesus. First red flag, okay? Second red flag, that person has no medical training, generally speaking. Third red flag, celery is a plant stem and a leaf. It doesn't want to get eaten. Yes, animals don't want to get eaten, but they can run away from you. They can kick you. They can bite you. Plants are stuck in the ground. Therefore, they evolve defense chemicals. And celery is full of furanocoumarins, which is a group of compounds that can accumulate in the skin, either by direct directly puncturing your skin if you are picking the celery. There's something called celery picker's skin where you get photodermatitis, phytophotodermatitis, more accurately, from picking celery because these furanocoumarins accumulate in your skin or they accumulate in your epidermis if you eat them. You can get them both ways. You can get them from inside and from outside. And when they accumulate in your epidermis, they appear to cross-link with DNA when exposed to UV light, creating inflammation and potentially pre-cancer. One of these furanocoumarins, is sorolin, which has been associated with phytophotodermatitis and increased risk of skin cancer. Should we be eating a lot of celery juice? I say no. And then to all the people who are saying, but aren't there so many good compounds in these plant foods, Paul? I say, do those plant foods do anything for you that you can't get by living well otherwise? This is the equation I would challenge all of you to consistently ask yourselves. What is the net benefit, not the gross benefit, the net benefit of plant foods in your life? Is it really going to give you more glutathione or protect your DNA more? I'd say no. I say that is bullshit. And the evidence that they will is pretty shaky, especially if you are doing other things right. Getting sun, getting environmental hormesis, heat, cold, sunlight, exercise, etc., and eating animal foods and the least toxic plant foods, giving your body the nutrients it needs to make glutathione, protect the DNA on its own, and then you get less toxins. That is my equation for what a ideal human diet is. The most nutrients, the most bioavailable amino acids, vitamins, minerals, peptides, cofactors, and the least amount of toxins. And I continually now, always evolving, continually come back to the idea that this is an animal-based diet. This is a carnivorous diet where you get nutrients from organs, either fresh or desiccated, meat, connective tissue, fat, and you combine it with the least toxic plant foods, which are fruit, generally speaking, and maybe a little bit of honey, could be a plant food or an animal food. So this is all to say that do what works for you. Do experiments, but do them for real. If you really value your health, if you really want to reclaim your birthright radical health, do those experiments for real and sort out what I'm saying versus someone else. I'm going to contradict a lot of people who are also going to sound super smart in this podcast, and it's going to leave your head spinning. Try it, see how you feel, and then make your own decision and think intuitively about what makes sense evolutionarily. I think we must also frame so many of these discussions in an evolutionary context. What makes sense for us evolutionarily? What foods have humans eaten for millions of years? Are those likely to be killing us? It's possible, but it seems unlikely to me. How have humans lived? This is why anthropology gives such an important framework to medicine and really helps us understand where we've come from as humans. This is what the remembering, an idea, a meme that I've used is so important. What have we always done? We've always sought out meat and organs. This is what the Hadza do. This is what other hunter-gatherer groups do. Are those foods going to be bad for us? I doubt it. We've always sought the saturated fat that comes with them. It would never have been forsaken. Is that going to be bad for us? I doubt it. But it might lower, raise LDL. Maybe LDL should be considered. And that will be the first question for this AMA. We've always sought out meat and organs and fat above everything else. And then in terms of plant foods, we were much more likely to eat fruit. Is fructose going to be bad for us? Probably not, especially when it's in fruit, something we've been eating for thousands of years, hundreds of thousands, millions of years. What about honey? Is that going to be bad for us? Probably not. The Hadza eat honey intensely, intensely, intensely. I ate it with them, with the bugs in the comb, and they went ham on the honey. Trust me, they eat a lot of honey. And they demonstrate exquisite glucose tolerance. That's been demonstrated many times in multiple studies with the Hadza and other hunter-gatherers. Well, Paul, it's just because they work out so much. Well, that doesn't really change anything. You can easily become someone that is moving and working out a lot, but it's also very insulin resistant. That doesn't protect them. Exercise doesn't reverse a bad diet. I've said that many times. So the reason the Hadza are insulin sensitive is because they don't eat garbage processed foods that we eat. What is most damaging about those processed foods? I've said this many times, but it's the beginning of the year, so let's start off very clearly on the right foot. Seed oils, evolutionarily inconsistent amounts of linoleic acid, and processed sugars, things we never would have had. But what have our ancestors always had? Sunlight, community, dancing, clean water, hopefully. Not always, but hopefully. Exposure to risk, adventure, just doing things that they enjoyed, being in nature, hunting animals, eating them from nose to tail, and eating the least toxic plant foods. Do hunter-gatherers eat vegetables, quote-unquote, from time to time? Sure, but only when they don't have more desirable foods. Think about it this way. There is a hierarchy of animal and plant foods. There's a hierarchy of foods that humans have always sought out. And it goes like this. Organs above meat, above animal fat, Those are probably the same. Organs, meat, fat, all together. Then honey, then fruit, maybe raw dairy if they can get it. And then once they are eating all those foods, if they don't have any of those foods, they might think about eating roots. And then they might think about eating leaves or stems or seeds, which are seeds, nuts, grains, and beans, but only in those dire straits, only in those circumstances where they don't have the other things. That, I think, is the framework that we should exist in as humans. If you want to be the best hunter you can be, if you want to live the most optimal life, give your body the signal that it is living the most optimal life by giving it the most cherished, the most sought after foods. So with all of that framework in mind, let's go to the first question. This is from Nick, and we'll do this again, but at Heart and Soil Supplements, we put out a newsletter. You can subscribe to the newsletter at heartandsoil.co. And to the newsletter, we asked the question, what questions would you guys like to see on the Ask Me Anything episode? We got 36 pages. I pulled out about 4 questions to go over in this AMA. I'm going to go over through many more Ask Me Anything episodes this year. And so we're going to get to a lot of your questions. Many of them are repeated. This one is from Nick. He says, what to say to friends and family that think I'm slowly killing myself? And question 2, concerns about high cholesterol, not really concerns, but uncertain about who to believe. So I will address both of those questions. Why do we believe that we are killing ourselves eating the foods that our ancestors have always sought out? Where is the evolutionary framework? Where has it gone wrong? It's gone wrong because of data manipulation, data bias. People are looking at epidemiology studies. Most of you know this, and I won't belabor this point. We're looking at observational studies, studies that don't actually have an intervention. Because when we look at interventional studies, meat and organs are very good for humans. They don't cause inflammation, full stop. They don't cause damage to DNA, full stop. They don't cause the immune system to be activated, full stop. They nourish us and they provide us with nutrients. So, but wait, Paul, too much is not good, right? No, too much is great. The more you eat, the better. Your body will tell you when you've had enough protein, but generally I think most of us are not getting enough animal meat and organs. These are the most nutrient-rich foods, and they don't lead to problems when you eat too much of them because most of us aren't eating enough of them. Of course, you could eat too much meat, but it's going to be very hard, and your body will give you a signal, hey, I'm not really hungry for that meat anymore. I don't want it anymore. For most people, here is the metric that I think is a good baseline. 1 gram of protein per pound of goal body weight. A little less, give or take 10% for most people. I'm 165, 170 pounds. My goal body weight is just about 165, 170 pounds. So I eat about 170 pounds and 170 grams, not pounds, of meat per day. How much is 170 grams? 1 pound of meat is 100 grams. That means I eat about 1.7 pounds of meat per day. Most days I eat a little more than that. I find that women have trouble getting to this 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight, but I think that most people, men and women, will feel better when they do that. Increase bone density, especially thinking about my 71-year-old mother for this. I wish she would eat more protein. But what happens is that many of us crowd out the most nutrient-rich sources of food in our diet, meat and organs, with less nutritious things. My mom was eating hummus over New Year's, over Christmas, and I just shook my head, tried to gently say, that's probably not a great thing, Mom. It's full of like lectins and phytic acid. It's negative nutritionally. It's got seed oils in it. And you're not hungry enough to eat the meat and the other nutritious foods because you're eating these less nutritious foods. So be careful of that. If you can't get the meat in, at that level, think about the other things you're eating in your diet that are crowding it out. But that is the framework that I think we should have. Why do we think we're killing ourselves with these foods? I don't know. And I think most of us who would, most people in our lives who would tell us that we are killing ourselves with it wouldn't have any real evidence to back that up either. So what do you say to those people? Okay, you think I'm killing myself. Why do you think that? What studies have you read? Are they epidemiology? Are they observational? Or do you actually have some data? Oh no, you just heard it on the news? Well, guess how accurate that is. And does it make sense evolutionarily? It doesn't at all. Not at all. Because I can tell you that if you look at hunter-gatherers like the Hadza, like the Akung, like the Anamono, the people on the earth who live most closely like hunter-gatherers today, they are free from chronic disease. And they live as long as us. If they make it out of childhood, which has a higher infant mortality and childhood mortality for them, which skews their life expectancy, but they have an adult lifespan, an adult health span, which dwarfs ours, and their life expectancy is the same as ours, even without any of the fancy medical care we have, and they have a health span that is vitality span that dwarfs ours. This is a very important point. Hunter-gatherers don't live to be 35. They live to be 70, 80 years old, sometimes even more than that. And they are vital much later in life. They are free from chronic disease, so much more than us. Incidence of obesity, unheard of in these populations. And guess what? They eat these foods. They are the perfect example of the opposite of killing yourself with these foods. So point that out to your friends who are saying this, and maybe they'll understand. Or buy them a plane ticket, go to Tanzania, visit the Hadza yourself, and you'll see. We'll go back to Tanzania hopefully this year. We'll see how it goes. Second question is concerned about high cholesterol. Not really concerns, but uncertain about who to believe. Okay, every time I talk about cholesterol, I think people get a little confused. So let's try and be as simple as possible. I don't want to belabor this point because it gets super technical. And again, this is where things are going to get a little bit difficult, but bear with me. And if you don't believe what I'm saying, then try it for yourself and see how you do. On to the next question from William. One question I'd like to ask is, what role does a carnivore way of eating have on someone who has CAD, which is coronary artery disease? How does it affect immune response to viral exposures, if at all? So those are two questions. We've basically covered the answer to the coronary artery disease query already, but I get to ask this question a lot. Well, I already have coronary artery disease. Can I eat an animal-based diet? And my answer is yes, because your goal, if you have coronary artery disease, or if you don't have coronary artery disease, that is atherosclerosis, and you want to prevent it, is to become metabolically healthy. And becoming metabolically healthy is about improving your fasting insulin as one metric to indicate that metabolic health and eliminating seed oils and processed sugars. Red meat, organs, fruit, honey, raw dairy will not make you less metabolically healthy. They will not worsen your atherosclerosis. There is no direct evidence to prove that. That is completely evolutionarily inconsistent. If you listen to my podcast last year with Sean O'Mara, a physician in Minneapolis who is doing MRI scans of the abdomen looking at visceral fat, he talked about multiple cases of regression of visceral fat, that is fat around your organs, which is a direct indication of metabolic health on animal-based, oftentimes ketogenic diets. I'm not a fan of long-term keto, but those are the ones that he was using. These type of foods can be used to reverse these illnesses. There are anecdotes that people will always point to. These are the same people that deride me for using anecdotes. I talked about one last week on the podcast, specifically a gentleman on Twitter who had been eating animal-based, or let's just say carnivore and keto, for 5 years, and then had evidence of a significantly blocked left main artery. However, we didn't know his full history when more of it was discovered. He had pre-existing coronary artery disease, and we don't know any of the details about what he was doing with his diet. So he said he had persistent oxidized LDL that was elevated, persistent LP little a, which to me suggests there's something else going on. We don't have a fasting insulin on him. We have no idea of what the context was for all those things. So people will love to point out these anecdotes and then criticize those of us who would point to case studies while saying, asterisk, it's an anecdote. It doesn't mean everything, but it's important to generate a hypothesis. So there's a bit of a double standard in those situations. But I think that with coronary artery disease, it is fine to eat meat and organs. They do not promote the formation of these things in the human body. And anyone who says otherwise is really either, number one, a very informed lipidologist who I would love to debate, or number two, somebody that doesn't actually know the science and is just parroting what they heard on CNN and can't understand the difference between epidemiology and doesn't understand the nuance between familial hypercholesterolemia, Mendelian randomizations, GSD1A, glycogen storage diseases, familial hyperlipidystrophy, all these type of things. So there's a lot of nuance there that you need to look into. But I think that over and over, we find that LDL is not directly atherogenic. I want to repeat a CT coronary angiogram myself. I did one about a year and a half ago, and my coronary artery calcium score was zero. At that time, I was 42 or 43. My father has a history of coronary artery disease that is early, so I have a major risk factor for coronary artery disease historically, but eating animal foods for so long, I have zero plaque in my arteries based on a coronary artery calcium scan. It's not perfect, but it's pretty darn good. So, and also, as I said, I'm very metabolically healthy, so there's a lot of context there to consider. Next question from Delania. As a woman, I really care about my skin. I asked your Heart and Soil team what skincare product they would recommend to put on my face. I don't think I could ever avoid putting anything on my face. I live in a very dry climate. Moisturizing is essential. Also, I am very prone to eczema. She has a few questions, but I will get to those in a moment. But so Delania is asking about face care. And my answer is this. If you want to put something on your face, use tallow. In 2022, I am planning to build an animal-based skincare company and to make these type of products more available to people, products that don't have linoleic acid in them. Just as we talked about in the beginning of the podcast with Furano coumarins and the fact that you can get them directly by putting them on your skin or by eating things. I believe that if you put linoleic acid, that is the major polyunsaturated fatty acid that I'm not a fan of, in seed oils on your skin, it can accumulate in the epidermis, in the cell membranes of your skin, just like you can when you're eating it. So if you're not eating linoleic acid, or you're cognizant of avoiding linoleic acid in your foods, you also want to be cognizant of avoiding putting linoleic acid on your skin. So don't use skincare products that are high in linoleic acid. Many of the oils in your face creams, face lotions, and sunscreens are very high in linoleic acid. It makes just sense. Use your intuition here. Fat is fat. If you put fat on your skin, it's going to be incorporated into the fatty cell membranes of your epidermis. If the cells of your skin become more enriched in linoleic acid, they're going to be more fragile, more able to be damaged by the sunlight. Why do we think sunlight causes photo damage? Because all of us are full of seed oils in our skin. What if you actually ate more tallow? What if you actually ate less linoleic acid? This is why I'm not a fan of olive oil. Why I'm not a fan of avocado oil. Why would you increase the amount of linoleic acid in your diet? You'll get a very small amount, all you need in animal fat, maybe 2% in tallow, either from fire starter, from hardened soil, or from the fat that's on your ribs or your steak or in your burger, or just the tallow that you render yourself that you can use on foods. That is the best source of nutrition for humans in animal fats, in my opinion. It also has stearic acid, which is a fatty acid that I've talked about a lot in the past. It is a saturated fatty acid that turns on mitochondrial fat burning, and it has odd chain fatty acids. Now I'm talking about tallow and the benefits of animal fats with tallow. But don't put linoleic acid on your skin. Know what's in your skincare products. So if you absolutely want to use a moisturizer on your skin, use tallow. If you don't want to smell like tallow on your skin, we'll be coming out with skincare products in 2022 because we know that you guys want these. I really want to make a very, very good sunscreen, and that will be coming very soon. Believe me, there will be very, very small amounts of linoleic acid in the sunscreen. But this person says, Delaney goes on to say, I couldn't use nothing, because that would be my first impulse to say, don't use anything on your skin. But maybe my skin is different than hers. I don't think I have oily skin, but I don't need to use anything on my skin. I'm a guy, maybe I don't pay enough attention to it, but my skin is fine. I do live in a pretty jungly climate, but even when I'm in dry climates, my skin doesn't get dry. I find all my friends have to use lotion on their hands. I never have to do this. I never use chapstick. That stuff is addictive and it's bullshit. That'll be my next bullshit video. You heard it here first, or one of them. I never use anything on my face. Okay, I think if you're eating well, if you're getting enough good animal fat, you shouldn't need these things. Maybe there's a genetic component, okay? Let's acknowledge that. Let's say maybe you're genetically predisposed to dry skin and I'm not. In that case, I would use animal fats. And stay tuned for the other stuff we're going to make, which will be way better. Delaney also says she's predisposed to eczema. So am I as a human. But if you know my history, you know that I found significant improvements in my eczema when I changed my diet, when I cut out plant foods. I wasn't eating junk food in my diet. I wasn't eating seed oils, and I wasn't eating sugars. What I was eating were mushrooms and vegetables. Cutting those out made all the difference for me. This is my anecdote. See if it helps you. What's the framework? If you are not thriving, maybe question those assumptions that you have. That was what helped me with my diet, was cutting out the seed oils, the sugars many, many years ago, but then more recently cutting out the vegetables. Mushrooms, I'm not a fan of those either. So don't get excess linoleic acid in your food. Don't get excess linoleic acid in your skincare products if you want your skin to be healthy and you want to thrive and you want to avoid sun and photo aging. Doesn't sun age us, Paul? No, it doesn't. I don't believe the sun is going to age you if you are eating the right foods. I don't believe humans generally need sunscreen. Don't get burned, but this is what melanin in your skin is for. I have many friends who are from the UK. They are genetically white as a sheet, but they come to Costa Rica, they gradually increase their tan, and they turn very, very dark. We can do this. This is what your body is adapted to do. Even people who are very fair-skinned can adjust to the sun if your diet is right at its core. That is the question that I want most of you guys to answer. How are you eating? How much linoleic acid is in your diet? And if you're having eczema, that makes me think there are more things in your diet that could be changed. Delania goes on to say, okay, how can a child improve their microbiome in the gut to assist in recovering from plaque psoriasis? My answer to this is, that's an autoimmune condition. Start animal-based. Start carnivore-ish. Organs, meat, fruit, honey, maybe raw dairy if they tolerate it. Do that. Join us for Animal-Based 30, animalbased30.com. That should help the plaque psoriasis. If it doesn't, look into the gut. Obviously, there's a connection between the gut microbiome, but I think that the first step to improving your gut microbiome is avoiding things that mess up your gut microbiome. Could plant foods, could vegetables actually harm your gut microbiome? Absolutely. And that's totally different than what you've been told. But I've talked about this many times in the past on the podcast. If you guys are interested, I can go into more detail about it in the future. Lectins, carbohydrate binding proteins, have been shown to change the balance of gut flora in your gut. Where are lectins found? Nightshade plants, tomatoes, potatoes, these type of things, and seeds. Seeds, nuts, grains, and beans. These are all going to have massive lectins. Could this be disrupting your gut flora? Yes. Could oxalates be disrupting your gut flora? Yes. These are the changes you should make first for the gut flora. And go swim in a lake, go swim in a river, go outside, get sunlight. We know that good sunlight can affect your gut microbiome positively. There's an interventional study that I've talked about in the past in which people were given narrow band UV light. So not pure sunlight, but narrow band UV, which is going to be found in the sunlight, and their gut microbial diversity increased. So sunlight can increase your gut microbiome. That was an interventional study, not epidemiology. Okay, so on to one last question for this Ask Me Anything podcast, and then we will wrap up for this week. Okay, there's kind of a testimonial from Cody followed by a question. I'm a 33-year-old male. I've been following your diet recommendations for a little over a year, and all I can say is, wow, the initial change I experienced was amazing. I went from not having any answer to an issue I had been facing for almost 5 years to being able to eliminate the issue in just about 5 days. I have been having odd spasms in the bottom of my esophagus for a long and consistent period of time. In the first several months, I was under the impression it was a heart arrhythmia issue. I had numerous tests on my heart done with no answer. We tried 2 scopes, a barium swallow. All the doctors could tell me is that I have a high acidity in my stomach, and it was inflaming my esophagus, causing it to spasm. They could not give me recommendations to fix it other than a band around the lower part of my esophagus. I said, hell no to that. I had been following a naturopathic life for most of my life, but could not get any answers from any of the doctors in that field either. One day after I started following you, I decided to try straight carnivores for as long as I could. In the first week, the symptoms of the spasms diminished, and you have no idea how much better I felt. I totally changed my view on everything I thought I had learned from a child about natural healing and the ability to live a naturopathic life. I have since swapped to animal-based and carnivore-ish diet that you have shifted to, and I'm still symptom-free to this date. My wife and I keep almost every desiccated organ supplement you offer on subscription, and we are rocking it. That's awesome. Thank you so much for what you do and for providing help to individuals. All I can say that I have to ask is this. The only issue I still face is muscle twitches in weird places like the corners of my eyes and maybe occasionally on my arm. They are very random and have no reason to exist. Could you maybe speak about that and what is causing it? So these muscle twitches are random in some people. For some people, they're related to stress. For some people, they're related to poor sleep. For some people, they're related to inadequate electrolytes, which could be an inadequate amount of carbohydrates. So my recommendations would be this. It sounds like Cody has had massive improvement in what sounds like reflux. He almost needed a band. How incredible that he was able to avoid that. And so I would recommend making sure you're getting enough carbohydrates, getting enough salt, making sure your sleep is on point, and then thinking about stress and then readjusting from there. So that would be my recommendations to begin looking at those muscle twitches. And then maybe we can follow up with Cody in a few weeks or find out what's going on with him. Okay, one more to end. Hi, Paul. I hope this email finds you well. This is from Felicia. I have a question for you about liver. More specifically, how to discuss it with other people. My mother is vehemently, I love that word, opposed to trying liver. As a child, she always hated when her mother would make her liver and onions. She still thinks the smell is awful. Her main point of contention is that she says the liver is a filter for toxins. Each time she has said that recently, I have not been equipped with an adequate response. I'd love to change her perspective, especially because I know she would really benefit from the nutrients that liver has to offer, but I'm not sure what to say. If you have an approachable, concise, and family-friendly explanation of what liver does in the body and the benefits it provides, I'd love to hear it. Thank you for everything you do. You have helped my boyfriend and I in so many ways. We are forever grateful. I eagerly look forward to the next bad podcast. Well, Felicia's in this podcast, so hopefully she listens to this one. So the liver is not a filter. Repeat after me. The liver's not a filter. If you think of a filter, whether it's a Berkey filter for water or an air conditioning filter, or think of something like a colander or a sieve, you pour something through it and it collects the dust on the filter, right? When you pull out the air filter on your air conditioner, it's full of dust. When you pull out the lint filter on your dryer, it's full of lint from your clothes. The liver doesn't accumulate toxins, okay? The liver is a biosynthetic factory that biotransforms with phase 1 and phase 2 detoxification toxins into forms that can be excreted in the urine and the poop. That's the technical term for feces. Actually, it's the reverse. And there's phase 3 detoxification too, which is actually pooping out the poop, so you need to not be constipated. But this is one reason that I am not a fan of many plant compounds that will inhibit enzymatic systems in phase one or phase two detoxification. Some of those are things like furanocoumarins. That's been the subject of many things recently, like that are found in things like grapefruit, right? Grapefruit is the one citrus fruit that has a furanocoumarin that can inhibit one of your P450 enzymes and inhibit detoxification in your liver. Pepper, black pepper. This is another bullshit topic that's coming on my Instagram feed. I'm not a fan of that because it has compounds like piperine that do the same thing, that inhibit UDP glucuronosyl transferase. That is a glucuronide adding enzyme. It adds glucuronide to toxins, and then they're excreted in your poop and your feces and your urine. You get it, poop or feces and urine. So your liver biotransforms things and then gets them out of your body. It doesn't store them. The liver is so nutritious because it is such an enzymatic powerhouse. In order to do that, it needs all these nutrients working in your body. Why should you eat liver? I have a whole separate video on why you should eat liver. But my question to you is this: where do you get your bioavailable vitamin A? Where do you get your choline? Where do you get your biotin? Where do you get your folate? Where do you get your riboflavin, a huge key enzyme for those with MTHFR polymorphisms? All of those are robustly represented in liver, one of the only real places you can get adequate amounts of those vitamins and minerals. Liver. Also good for copper to balance your zinc, et cetera, et cetera. You don't have to get too much of it though. Certainly there is such thing as vitamin A toxicity. I've talked about this a lot in the past. Polar bear liver has 1,000 times more vitamin A than cow's liver. You don't want to eat carnivore liver, but a cow's liver has a moderate amount of vitamin A. Maybe an ounce or half an ounce a day is great. That's kind of the amount that I wanted to formulate in the desiccated capsules. So if you don't like the taste of liver, check out Hardened Soil. Check out the desiccated capsules. We've got lots of formulations there that all have about half an ounce or less of liver per day, which I think is the sweet spot for nutrients and vitamin A. A little bit of vitamin A, really valuable for humans. Don't eat 6 ounces or 10 ounces of liver per day long term. I don't think that's good for humans or evolutionarily consistent. But remember this: liver, not a filter, doesn't bioaccumulate, biotransforms and excretes those things from your body. And I'll tell you this much: most people who haven't eaten liver in the past, the first time they try it, especially if it's raw or lightly cooked, they feel something. They feel better. They feel more clarity. They feel more energy. And that is amazing. I did this with my friend Ben Lynch, who's a well-known naturopath. When I was in Seattle in my residency, I gave him some raw liver and he said he felt high. I don't think he was getting enough in his life, but this is the benefit of raw liver. I gave some raw liver to Joe Rogan when I was on his podcast. I think because Joe eats enough, he didn't really feel a buzz, but my goal was to get Joe Rogan buzzed. Not in the way that Joe Rogan sometimes gets buzzed on his podcast, but with liver. Maybe I'll have another chance at it next time, or with some raw testicle, Joe. I'll bring it next time to your podcast. So that is the last question for this AMA podcast. Thanks for joining me for this one. I have a huge list of questions that you guys have sent, and I am super, super excited to be answering these in the future podcasts. Join us for the Animal Based 30 at Hardened Soil Supplements, animalbased30.com. And check this out, guys. We are 67 days out from the Animal Based Gathering in Santa Teresa, Costa Rica. Don't make any money from this. All the proceeds go to the nonprofit that I'm building called the Animal Based Nutrition Research Foundation. It's mostly just a community gathering. We're going to charge a little bit this year. Last year it was free, but this year we're going to incorporate all the food and all the activities and do all that for you guys. So we're going to charge a little bit of money, and anything we make that's extra goes to the Nutritional Research Foundation, the nonprofit. So join us. You can go to animalbasedgathering.com. We would love to see you in Santa Teresa. We're going to surf. We're going to jump off waterfalls. We're just going to be in community. And believe me, there's a ton of freaking sun here. You will love it. You will improve your microbiome. You will eat animal-based, and we'll have some organs for you to eat as well. So those are two things I want to tell you guys about. We've got all sorts of exciting things happening in 2022 at Heart and Soil. Stay tuned. Follow us there at Heart and Soil Supplements, and stay radical. I love you all.